For decades, reporters have relied on publicly available radio frequencies from NYPD scanners to race to the scene of breaking news events and share valuable insights with the public. But New York City's new plan to encrypt the police scanner system has left reporters in the dark, scrambling to find new ways to stay on top of what's going on.
I don't think it's a pro-NYPD issue. I think it's a pro-public transparency issue. We're always talking about police transparency, and to say, like, this is the greatest threat to police transparency that we've seen maybe ever. And there's, like, you know, you hear the crickets. It's like the silent. It's not just the silence on the radio. It's the silence is deafening, and it's going to get worse when the whole rest of the city gets closed down too.
Welcome to the Staten Island Advances from the Scene, a podcast bringing you an inside look at the biggest stories on Staten Island with the reporters who cover them. I'm your host, Eric Bascom, and this week I'm joined by Staten Island Advance senior opinions writer Tom Robleski to discuss New York City's plan to prevent the public from listening to police scanners and how it has impacted our coverage here on Staten Island. Thanks for joining me today, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for the offer.
Yeah, of course. I think it's a little ironic, the From the Scene podcast, and today we're going to basically be talking about how the city doesn't want anybody at the scenes. It's going to be harder and harder to report from the scene now, thanks to what's going on here in the city.
And there's nothing like being on the scene of anything, doing any kind of reporting.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important. I've been here now 7 years. There's such a difference in covering an event, being able to be there and get what's going on and the color and the visuals and all of that, as opposed to, you know, this happens sometimes too when we're short-staffed or whatever it is. You're writing it off a release afterwards, or you're calling people to get the info, and you can tell in the article the difference between being there and not being there. And so I think that this topic today is really important and is really going to kind of shape the way that not only our paper, but papers really and online outlets across the city are going to be able to cover
news.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I wanted to kind of start off just by talking about, for the listeners who may not know, just the role that police scanners have played historically in our news coverage, and you as someone who has been here for decades at this point, and I think relied on these pretty heavily at one point in your career. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of police scanners in the newsroom?
Well, one of the first gigs I had here, I was a night cop reporter, as we call it, and then you do fire and police and everything else. So yeah, every newsroom, and this is common, I'm sure this is everywhere, they have a police scanner, and scanners going all the time. And one of the things that I don't know if you've realized this, but because we don't have one here running all the time, you get a sense of, even if you're not a police reporter, when I was on the copy desk at night, it was the same thing. You can kind of tell when there's like this ordinary babble going on, because there's a constant stream of, you know, babble. And then you can hear a spike in somebody's voice, mm-hmm. you know, who's making a transmission. And you know that there's something going on. So it basically says if there's a car accident, if there's a shooting, if there's a stabbing, a fire, they give you the address, they send a response, and that says you as a reporter, you know, you go and you run on it, as we say, whether it's whatever the issue is, gives you the address. And so sometimes you get there before the police get there, if you're lucky. Sometimes you get there even before the fire trucks get there, depending on where you are when you hear that transmission. So it's vitally important to know what's going on, and not just for reporters, for also for the public. Now, I mean, hobbyists and other people, retired officers, off-duty personnel, they listen as well. They can respond. And it also helps people themselves know, hey, why am I hearing helicopters in my neighborhood? Why am I hearing all those sirens in my neighborhood? Why are there 5 cop cars down the block in my neighborhood? Am I at risk? Is there somebody loose? Mm-hmm. Like when you hear the helicopters, like, oh, are they chasing somebody?
Yeah, someone running around.
Are they in my backyard? Are they hiding in my garage? Are they hiding under my car? So it's vitally important just for public safety. Never mind, and I will get to this, you know, how the NYPD wants to sculpt the narrative.
Like I was saying earlier on, just also in terms of the quality of the coverage that we're able to provide, it's one thing if we get the information after the fact from some police sources who tell us, oh, this happened here, or there was a crash on the highway at 3 p.m., but we didn't tell it. No one knew about it because it didn't go over the scanner. We weren't able to send anybody out there. There could be cars flipped over. There could be people through the guardrail.
Right.
And typically, we hear something like that. We run out. We get some photos. We look at around the scene. We see if there's ambulances or people getting transported. All those different things, and now that becomes more and more difficult for us to do, and so the quality of the reporting that we're able to put out is much lesser, and it's really just kind of whatever the city wants to tell us, right? And so I know that's something that we want to dig into a little deeper here, but now we're really just relying on what we're being told as opposed to being able to go out and see it for ourselves.
You also get witnesses at a scene who may tell you something either that they haven't told the police, perhaps, or something different than than what the police are telling you. This is also a way for so you get the public involved as well, and that's goodwill for the newspaper, by the way, because they see you in their community, they see you in their neighborhood. This also helps reporters build police sources because they see you at the scene, okay, and then they see, and believe me, they're reading it the next day.
Yeah.
If they were at the scene and they see this thing in the newspaper, and especially if their name is mentioned, which a lot of times they don't like, but a lot of times they do, then they say like, oh, you know, Eric did a good job on that story. So next time you show up, you've got someone that's like, hey, officer, hey, Sarge, hey, captain, can you tell me a little bit something about this? Never mind how they, we'll get to this too, how they closed off information in the 90s, the way we used to get information, even not from the scanner, going into the actual precincts, and they closed that down too.
Yeah, and so I want to talk a little bit about this new plan from New York City that they've been kind of rolling out incrementally. Yeah. At first hit parts of northern Brooklyn, I believe, and now started on Staten Island here a few weeks ago, I believe in late February. Mm-hmm. And so what they're doing essentially is overhauling the police scanner system. Sure. And said they need to upgrade the infrastructure. And this is nothing new, right? A lot of these things have been in place for a while. We see the same thing on the Staten Island Railway right now. They're like, the radio system we're using is 35 years right. old. It's out of date. Right. We need new ones, right? So that's all well and good. You want to replace it, it's down temporarily. But when the new system is in place, the city is planning to encrypt it and essentially privatize it, right? In the fact that it will no longer be available to the public. We will no longer be able to listen in on what's going on once this new system has been in place. And so the city's justification for that is basically saying, as Mayor Adams says, the bad guys are listening too, right? Right. And that, I guess it's the idea that if they hear that police are responding to something over here, then that gives them an opportunity to go commit crime over here, whatever it may be. So that they're saying it has something to do with the safety of the police officers and making sure that their information is not being broadcast to people with ill intent, supposedly. But does that resonate with you? Do you think that that's really what's going on here, or is there something a little more malicious,
I guess you could say? I'm sure that there are concerns about police safety, especially these days. And I'm not going to discount that the mayor, a former police captain, wants to keep cops safe. But you alluded to it earlier. People have been listening to these scanners for decades. Mm-hmm. By one account, it was like 90 years, 80 years. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's I read that somewhere. Without much ill effect on public safety and police safety. And I think that there were always channels that police could go to, that weren't accessible, tactical channels and things that were not accessible to the public. This is just your general broadband police scanner. Listen, if they're heading to a scene and they're going to kick the door down, they're not going to be broadcasting it so that everybody can hear. And then there was always those kinds of shorthand that they would use if they were at a particularly hot scene and they kind of didn't want to let everybody know it was a hot scene. They'd get there and they'd be like, oh, and they'd talk very casually, oh, send the captain. So he's like, it's like, okay, they're sending a captain to a scene, or with fire, it's like, send the battalion, send the battalion chief out here, or send... Then you kind of read between the lines. So, it resonates with me a little bit, but I think overall there's more concern with, especially with Mayor Adams, the perception about crime. Is crime, we had spikes in crime, pandemic, and immediately post-pandemic. People in the subways don't feel safe. People, there seems to be a lot of incidents going on in the subway. Overall, are we safer than we were in the 70s and the 80s? If you do those, decade comparisons, of course. Of course, but that doesn't mean that we're as safe as we were in 2005 or in 2015, perhaps. There's always been an interest on the part of City Hall, NYPD, and a lot, and anybody in the city to control the narrative and say, okay, here's what's really going on. But we have no way now to make a judgment on that because we don't have our own information. It's like, wait, I was at that scene. And I'm telling you right now, that's not the way it was.
Right.
We've lost that ability now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the one thing that you mentioned there that it's kind of stuck out to me as well is the idea of shaping the narrative, right? And if you talk about all the time that, perception is reality to some degree in terms of crime, and if people don't feel safe, that is ultimately what is most important, right? And part of what is making people feel unsafe is that, these things are being reported and thrown on the front page, and it kind of sees, people see it going on, right? And again, people should have that knowledge, right, of what is going on in their community. community. But if you're the city and you want people to believe that things are safer than they might think, then what do? You limit the ability to show those types of crimes that are going on. Correct. Now there will be things that go missed or unseen, or there could be assaults, murders, crashes, burglaries, fires, all of these things that we'll eventually get some info on it and report it.
Maybe.
But we won't be, maybe. We won't be able to put it out there the way that we should be able to, right? And that we've historically been able to. We won't be able to cover it in the same way. And so when you're doing this and you're impeding reporters' abilities to cover these types of crime and breaking news stories, you're essentially muting the coverage. The cynics out there that believe that that is probably more of what the city is concerned with right now than actually protecting the police officers.
There is no greater compact between government at any level and public safety. It's whether it's federal, state, city, your borough, you have to feel safe in your home, you have to feel safe on public transit, you have to feel safe out in the street, you have to feel like your spouse, your children are safe. That's the first job of any executive or any city council or any government, whatever. You're not going to have an independent evaluation. And not only that, it kind of balkanizes things, right? Because now with video and with Citizen App and everything else, you can actually see live video from Queens or from Brooklyn, and it gives you a fuller picture because they had access to the scanner and they would go and do it themselves. Now, you're not going to see as many of those things because they're not going to be able to go to those events. And then you're going to get something from DCPI, and DCPI can be very helpful at times. DCPI can be as helpful as they want to be sometimes. I don't want to get them angry at us or whatever else.
Right, difficult. Of course.
It's difficult enough to get information, and I understand that there are sensitivities, but to just get, you know, a 2 or 3 sentence email handed back to you about something that's of major impact in your community, I think does a disservice, not just to us, it does a disservice to everybody. Now nobody's going to know about the safety in their own neighborhood.
We'll be right back. The Mayor of Maple Avenue is a powerful multi-part podcast about Sean Sinise, a victim of former Penn State football coach Jerry Sandusky, who was arrested 10 years ago for numerous child sexual abuse charges. The podcast series is written and hosted by Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Sarah Ganim, who takes listeners into the world of addiction rehabilitation, where society can be quick to celebrate the consequences for abusers while not addressing the needs of their victims. Subscribe now to the Mayor of Maple Avenue wherever you get your podcasts.
That was kind of my next thing in talking about sort of the concerns that this raises for journalists. And I was looking at some of our early reporting on this, and I knew that it was something that we were taking seriously and that the paper was really concerned about when I saw a quote from our executive editor, Brian Leyline, in our first article talking about this. And I just want to kind of read through it real quick. It kind of spells out, I think, the opinion of many journalists and what we're struggling with here at the paper, and probably what a lot of residents kind of feel as well. The other thing is, I don't really know that this is that widely publicized. I also just kind of found out about this as we're preparing for the podcast and looking through our site, but I don't know that this is something that everybody knows is going on. But so anyway, to get to Brian's quote, he says, "We understand the NYPD's need to upgrade a system so many decades old, but to trash the public's right to know in the process is wrong and dangerous. Transparency is essential if the NYPD expects to maintain trust of New Yorkers. Mayor Adams says the bad guys monitor transmission in the pursuit of doing bad things. That is probably true. But other cities have discovered ways that the good guys continue access to the transmission in order to keep the public informed about what those bad guys are up to." And so I think that kind of sums it up nicely in terms of what we've been talking about. But is there anything else that you'd like to add how it's going to impact us here at the paper?
Well, it's a trade-off. You trade off that some of the bad guys are going to hear information that the NYPD would rather not them hear. And of course, my other thought was, well, who's going to be able to break the encryption? The bad guys.
Right.
Not us, you know, ordinary Joes and Janes. And I also, it's interesting to me, so we're a couple of years from George Floyd. We're a couple of years from that sort of national reckoning about police interactions with the public, particularly in communities of color, particularly in economically disadvantaged communities. Well, every police call that you can monitor is going to be an interaction with the public. And now we're getting closed out from a lot of those interactions. So who's to say who fired the first shot? Who's to say who was an emotionally disturbed person, quote unquote, and a police officer had to respond? Now, you know me, I've written a lot of stuff pro-NYPD, anti-bail reform, anti-rioting. But to me, it's like to have this kind of cone of silence around an agency basically that probably has more day-to-day interactions with the public than just about any other agency, more than buildings,
so, yeah.
more than the fire department, probably more than maybe EMS has more with, but I mean, to be totally closed out and then they say you like nothing to see here. Very disturbing. It's disturbing for us as journalists, but you know, out there, people aren't fans of journalists, right? They think all journalists are, you know, it's like that's the joke. Like, well, what's the occupation that you hate the most until you need them? Well, usually it's lawyers and then it's journalists,
yeah.
right behind. So nobody's going to cry any tears for us, except when they look and they say like, hey, what was going on in Annandale?
Yeah.
What was happening down there? Like the cops were there for 2 days. I was like, we don't know.
Yeah.
We have no idea. And if nobody calls in and says, hey, by the way, Staten Island Advance, you got to get down to Annandale and see what's going on, we're not going to know.
Right. And that transitions perfectly into what I was looking to talk about next, how we are going to adapt our coverage now that we are kind of shut out in this way and we're no longer able to hear it directly from the source and race to the scene and all of that stuff. And so I know that you sit in on some of the meetings with our editors and the managers here who are responsible for kind of figuring out our coverage. And so I know that we probably don't have everything nailed down yet, and I don't know how much you can share, but I'm just curious, what our breaking news team, like, how are they going to adapt to this, and how are we going to make sure that we can still get to some of these scenes even though we're not getting those scanner transmissions?
Well, you know, I don't think I'm telling any secrets out of school when I say most news organizations, certainly our news organization, breaking news, which usually means crime, fires, accidents, is a big part of what we do.
Yeah.
It's a big part of what readers come to us for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're the source for that stuff. It generates eyeballs on our content. So it's very distressing from a news perspective, never mind from the philosophical perspective that we've already been talking about, but just from our logistical, mechanical issues that we have here. We're going to be relying on DCPI, obviously, and there are good contacts in DCPI. Like any organization, there's good and bad. We're going to be relying on the public to tell us, you know, you see something happening in your neighborhood, let us know. I think that we're going to have a new tip line, email, social media type of response where if people are seeing things now, like, again, if you see something, say something. You know, the only way we hear things, for the most part, is from the public, whatever neighborhood it is, community board, that kind of thing. Now that's going to spread to the police coverage. In the future, they may give us access to radio transmissions. The press may get access with a 30-minute delay, which, you know, when you're talking about a jumper on the Verrazano Bridge, is kind of like, kind of useless.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Kind of like,
that?
You know, taking a shower with a raincoat on, as they say. So hopefully the public will realize that they're missing out when they don't see this information, especially in their own neighborhoods, and will reach out to us. But again, it's significantly hamstringing. And again, when this is happening in the rest of the city, I think then you're going to see the profile. When they start closing out Manhattan and all of Brooklyn and all of the other more populous boroughs, and you know, Spectrum News, local weeklies, podcasters who do this kind of stuff, bloggers who do this kind of stuff, the New York Times, everybody is going to be like, hey, wait a minute. What are we going to do here? This is what people want to read. This is what we want people to read. Because this is the most important thing that a government does is protect its citizens. And now we don't know how they're doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned early on there that it's one of the more read types of content that we have on our website, right? People are coming to us looking for information on that stuff. And
no
they want to know and they want to be informed as to what's going on in their community and why there are sirens blaring down the block and, you know, why there's a helicopter over their backyard.
That accident you passed on the highway. Right.
And so not only are we not going to be able to provide that as easily, but here on Staten Island, we are really the only people providing that, right? So
correct.
If I think about it, if something like this happens in Manhattan, New York One might get there, or if they don't, the Post might get there, or if they don't, the Daily News might get there. If not, the Times might get there, right? And all those different places they cover, all those different outlets cover that stuff. Here on Staten Island, it needs to be a major, major, major situation for us to draw people
yes.
from outlets in other parts of the city. So we really are, in many cases, the only people reporting these breaking
We're
news
it.
Events.
I
don't know this for sure, but I would say 90% of the time, the breaking news that we report here, probably not reported elsewhere in the city. So if we're not able to get it, then no one's really getting it. And so I think that that's really one concern. And then
makes us more isolated from the rest of the city as well.
Right. Yeah. And then other people don't know what's going on Staten Island either. And so it's troubling in that way. And then in terms of how we're adapting here, you mentioned, I mean, essentially we're now looking to crowdsource information from the public and hope that people will reach out to us and let us know and we can react based on that. And so I know that there's been some talk about maybe a new phone line for people to call or potentially getting something running on social media. The one thing I know that I can share right now, I spoke to our breaking news editor, Eddie Dana, and he had mentioned an email address, a tip line essentially. Mm-hmm. And so we have our standard tips at SI Advance where people send us ideas for all different types of stories. Mm-hmm. And so this one is going to be breaking@siadvance.com. So that will be the new designated email address for if you have something going on in the community or you hear something or see something, people can reach us out to us there. But even that is not really the most efficient way to get information. I think, like we said, we're going to try and move things or kind of get some things running on social or via text or via phone call or whatever it might be. But for now, if people do have information on a breaking news event and they do want to reach out to us, that is the best way to do it. So that's breaking@siadvance.com.
Those email addresses get looked at, tips. Every morning every morning in our meeting, we get like whatever the handful of tips that have come in and we parcel them out to, you know, to the writers. It's going to be the same with this. Unfortunately, time is of the essence sometimes when you're responding to, you know, a fire scene, you know, a car accident scene, barricaded person in a home, that kind of stuff. I mean, this is not like the non-run-of-the-mill stuff is where I think we're going to suffer from not having timely access.
Yeah, and so moving on, I wanted to talk a little bit about the reaction that we have seen from the local elected officials on this. So, I mean, there's some people who are voicing some concerns about it and the lack of transparency, but also understanding the concerns of the NYPD here. And so I'm just kind of curious what you've thought of the take that our politicians here on Staten Island have had on this new policy.
Our state lawmakers, I don't know if that's changed since I was looking at this a week or so ago when I was writing something, who didn't respond to our didn't respond to us.
Most of them, yeah.
Most of them did not respond to us, so I found that to be troubling. I know that the city council has said that they want to see how this is implemented before they kind of figure out. So I guess we give them some leeway, but then again, when I hear the New York City Council say we want to protect cops, I get a little bit of cognitive dissonance with that. Not necessarily our locals, but you know, the wider net. You know, I get kind of all of a sudden we're concerned about the bad guys going after the cops. So, you know, I think that there should be more of an outcry, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, we serve their same constituents. The route for them to reach their constituents as well. Crime, whenever people feel unsafe, they go to their local officials and they say, hey, I don't feel safe. Hey, my family member got mugged. Hey, my catalytic converter got stolen. Hey, there's something going on in my neighborhood. All the windows were broken in the cars. What are you going to do about it? I can't sleep at night. So for them to kind of not be concerned about this or like not to share their concerns, to be generous about it, I think is very troubling.
Yeah, and so that has been kind of the response that we've heard so far from City Council, and there's currently no legislation being introduced at the city level that would challenge these new policies or force any sort of transparency here. But Councilwoman Camilla Hanks represents the North Shore of Staten Island. She had previously chaired the Committee on Public Safety for mm-hmm. the City Council.
Right.
She was kind of just talking about the need to strike a balance between public safety and transparency, kind of walking the fence on it, not really going one way or the other. But from what we've heard from her and what she's told other publications is that she would expect transparency bills or any new legislation regarding this to not come until after the program has been fully rolled out. And again, this currently is just
2025.
Right. And so right now, this is only in parts of Brooklyn and here on Staten Island. So are they essentially saying, all right, wait 2 years and then we'll figure it out? So you have 2 years in the dark and then maybe we'll give you a little bit of access back. I mean, that to me was a little surprising that there's no, that they wouldn't seek to address this a little earlier on in the process before it's gotten to that point.
Again, all due respect to the concerns for the safety of police officers on the job, going into dangerous situations, not knowing what they're going to face behind that door. I get that. It's just that I've been in journalism for, I don't know, 30 years, whatever it is. I haven't seen the great detrimental effects of certainly not of reporters having access to scanner chatter, not even for people, ordinary folks, to have access. I haven't seen where it said, oh, you know what, because that was out there, this happened, and it was bad.
Right.
I haven't seen a preponderance of that. So show me, maybe they have done this and I missed it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Show me those dozen. It's like my favorite, you know, agency, the DOT. I'm like, okay, you put a stop sign up. It's like, well, okay, what kind of accidents did you have? How many were there? Why did you feel like you needed, what was so dire that you felt like you needed to take this step? And it's a big step, closing the public and closing the press out.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it would be a different story in some senses if, you know, we're regularly hearing of these cases, or, you know, we're going to court on some of these trials and we're hearing, well, it turns out that the culprits in this case were listening to the scanner, and because of that, yeah, they were able to go here when the cops right. were going here, and they were using that to do this and that. But this isn't something that, and we have a full-time court reporter. We, you know, like we said, breaking news is one of our biggest beats here. We are constantly covering this stuff. That's not something that I'm really hearing a lot of either. No. And up until this point, I haven't heard, well, the bad guys are listening to the scanner and that's allowing them to do this and do that.
They were lying in wait when the cops arrived. There was an ambush or what, right. God forbid,
like,
right?
But yeah, but I'm not hearing that.
I haven't heard that.
And maybe it's happening to some degree. And but again, that's not being made public, or that's not as large of an issue as they may lead
oh,
you
to. Oh, they would be
believe.
Making that public right now. They would be saying, well, here's five examples of, right. Of times when scanner chatter led the bad guys to either escape or to put police officers in harm's way.
Yeah, and we haven't heard that. No. And so that is a little concerning to me. And so while we don't currently have any city legislation at the state level, there is a senator mm-hmm. from a state senator from Queens, Michael mm-hmm. Gennaris. He has introduced legislation that would basically require police agencies throughout the state to give, we used unfettered access, which great word by our colleague Paul Liotta, but basically the media outlets would have live access to the streams at all times, or to the radio transmissions, and then there would be a 10-minute delay to the transmissions that are made available to the general public. So I think that this is kind of their way of compromising in some ways of, sure, maybe you don't want the general public to immediately know when everything is happening, but for reporters who are trying to disseminate this information to the public, it's probably better if they are able to respond in real time. And so that's something that has been introduced in the state Senate. There's no assembly version of the bill yet, so they're probably looking for a sponsor, a co-sponsor in the assembly. But I'm just kind of curious. I get frustrated with these sorts of things sometimes too. And when we need to turn to state law to fix city issues that right. the city is coming yeah. up with because the city doesn't want to do anything about it. And then the state needs to kind of bully them into doing something. And so I was kind of curious just on your feelings about the fact of this moving to a state level potentially. And if you're optimistic that that would even be able to pass at that level.
I don't know if any, I saw that same information about the bill last week. I don't know if they've gotten any assembly sponsors. I think it'd be very telling if they didn't mm-hmm. get any sponsors, because what's to argue with? It's basically preserving 2/3 of the status quo, which again has not been detrimental to public safety or to the safety of police officers in any demonstrable way that we've been told. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a 10-minute delay, because, you know, for the public, they're like kind of, they're hobbyists or whatever. Okay, I can buy that if that's the best deal I can get. I think that the unfettered access for everybody has been working fine.
Yeah.
And I don't think, and again, even for off duty. Now, what about if you're off duty and you happen to live on, and this happened to somebody I know. You're living in a block. Somebody's having a medical issue. There's an EMS guy down the block. He was able to get there in 2 minutes to help somebody. This was a friend of mine that's happened to. So what do you do for those folks? You give them kind of special password access to something. I think the status quo was fine. I think any degrading of that is troubling, and I generally, like you, I'm very cynical about the reasons I'm given upgrading the system, okay, you know, to protect, you know, police, fine, but it hasn't proven unsafe in the past.
Yeah, and like you said, too, the response that we've gotten, or lack of response, I guess, from our state lawmakers here on Staten Island, you know, our state assembly members and state senators, I mean, most of them just didn't respond or declined to respond. We got one person who actually gave us a statement on the issue, and that's Charles Fall on the North Shore, who expressed reservations about the bill. He says, oh, we need to balance these things, but he didn't really seem to be very much in support of restoring this. 90% of the statement is saying, well, we need to protect the law enforcement operations, and we could expose sensitive tactical information, and it can be exploited by the criminals and jeopardize the ongoing investigations and all of that kind of stuff. And so it didn't seem like
It's not I'm running to sponsor this bill
exactly.
in the assembly. Not
right.
going to do it.
Right. And then no one else even answered us, including our two state senators, which, again, the bill has only been introduced in the Senate so far, and our state senators, Jessica Scarsella Spanton and Andrew Lanza, both did not respond to our request for comment when we were working on this article. And so it seems like something that the island's elected officials are not too excited to talk about or throw their support one way or the other on that.
I mean, you could see how perhaps a Republican lawmaker could see this as a pro-police issue. Listen, nobody is arguing against keeping police officers safe. Certainly
right.
Not me.
No, that's not the point here.
It's not the point. But I don't think it's a pro-NYPD issue. I think it's a pro-public transparency issue. Then again, their government, they're part of the same nomenclature as NYPD. They are the government, you know, and we are, you know, the public and the press in between. So if they were going to side with anybody... But I'm wondering where all the more left-leaning, suspicious of NYPD, suspicious of the mayor, public transparency people who are always talking about police transparency, and to say, like, this is the greatest threat to police transparency that we've seen maybe ever. And there's like, you know, you hear the crickets. It's like the silent. It's not just the silence on the radio. It's the silence is deafening, and it's going to get worse when the whole rest of the city gets closed out. Too. What if there's a blackout?
Yeah.
And people are kind of curious, hey, what's going on? The TV news, that's one of the places where you would turn on it. I had a scanner in the house for years after I did police work. And it was like, you listen to it. What are they saying? During Hurricane Sandy, mm-hmm. Who was listening? What were we doing? We were listening to police scanner on a minute-by-minute bed. Natural disaster, 9/11. Big thing, big issues, big things happening. So...
Yeah, and before
the ferry, fire.
The ferry fire is another great one. Yeah, and you know
the last time the CD media was here.
Yeah, and when we heard that, we ran down to the ferry. I know you were among the reporters
absolutely.
Here.
Or Eric Garner.
Yeah, again.
Eric Garner.
And that's an interaction with the police that otherwise, how do we find out about that?
They might have
find out about it afterwards, or we get maybe a video from the community, right. Which was, in that case, we probably
But they knew to go. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe they heard on the scanner. Maybe they were in the neighborhood. I don't know. But so it's kind of citizen folks as well are kind of like, they hear the scanner and they run, mm-hmm. And they're there maybe before we are, and they get that video. What would the Garner case have been without that video?
Yeah, exactly.
Without people and without us being on the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And so before we go here, I'm just kind of curious, and this is obviously there's no way to know, and it's a bit of hypothesizing, but do you think that this is a policy that sticks long term, or do you think that there's going to be enough pushback or legislation at either the city or state level that this gets either reversed or adjusted or whatever it may be? What is your thoughts on whether this is able to stick?
I wonder if the state has jurisdiction to tell the city of New York how to operate its NYPD. I wonder if they have standing, so-called, to do that. I know there's going to be legal challenges from, you know, freedom of the press organizations. And I guess we'll see if this is really First Amendment territory for mm-hmm. us or not. It's NYPD is public, but they do have things that have to be kept confidential. Mm-hmm. I understand that. They undercover things like that they have to do. I think it's going to be a very long road. And then as time goes by, there's going to be, you know, less and less. You know, back in the 90s, we used to go into the police precincts and they would give you, they actually give you the 61s, right. The police reports and the accident reports. You could go upstairs to the detectives and talk to them one-on-one as long as you brought the papers.
Yeah.
They always had to bring a couple of free papers for everybody. You know, and then in like, it must have been 96, they said, you can't go upstairs anymore. You can't, you know, we're not giving you the 61s anymore. Call DCPI. That became like the mantra. I mean, we adjusted to that. We weren't happy about it because there were some things that happened in between shifts, didn't go over the radio. That we were able to find out just by going through the basket of reports. Mm-hmm. But I think this is going to be a much, much bigger thing, especially, again, and the New York Post and the Daily News and everything. You know, they said, if it bleeds, it leads. The local Channel 5, 7, 2, all, they all run to these crime scenes, and they're not going to know where to go either.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, definitely a huge issue and something that will impact our coverage moving forward here. And we will obviously keep you up to date on all of that because I think like we kind of led with here, this is mm-hmm. one of the bigger shifts in public policy that in terms of its effect on the public and the way that we are able to get information to them. So Thank you so much for joining me today, Tom. It was a pleasure as always. This was a great conversation. I always love having you on, but this was a good one. And I hope our listeners feel the same way about this. And maybe honestly contact your local elected officials if you feel strongly about it. And if you feel the other way, then feel free to let us know about that as well. We're not trying to dictate anyone's opinion on these things, but just in making sure people know the way that this is going to impact the type of news that they're able to get from us. So thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Any old time, you know that.
Thank you for listening to the Staten Island Advances from the Scene. If you like what you've heard, please make sure to rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit silive.com for the latest on all these stories and more. Thank you for supporting local journalism.